This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. This Sunday is Father's Day, a good time to reflect on the role of fathers and just what it means to be a good dad. The North Carolina Fatherhood Conference takes a day to look at those questions. Each year, the Family Resource Center South Atlantic hosts the event. It's geared to giving dads the tools and guidance they need to create stronger bonds with their children. And joining me now is Derek Byrd, co-founding member and program director of Family Resource Center South Atlantic. That's in Raleigh, and he is also one of the minds behind the annual Fatherhood Conference. Thanks for joining us, Derek.
Thank you.
Also with us today is a panelist from the Fatherhood Conference, Dion Showtime Chavis, nighttime radio personality at K97.5, which is the Triangle's hip-hop and R&B station. Dion, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Let me ask you, Derek, what inspired you to launch this conference?
Well, the Family Resource Center had been involved in looking at how we can better serve families in our respective programs. And I would say a consistent thread that continually kept popping up was the fact that, where we work more with families where they was headed by women, and that there was definitely a need to figure out how to better engage and involve the fathers, or at least those non-custodial fathers who still were involved with families and in strengthening their capacity to be even better engaged. So we really felt that there was a need to begin to start really addressing how we can look to strengthen fatherhood across the state, and particularly in the areas and the counties that we were serving. And so the idea of a conference came up as a result of the work that I had started to engage in when I worked at Wake County Human Services, and we were looking at dads and how we could better involve dads in our programs and services through Wake County.
Yeah, that's interesting. You're working for Wake County Human Services, and that's when you begin to notice that every time you turn around and try to help the dads, the programs just aren't there. Lots of stuff in place for moms, but not so much for dads. So what was missing? What would have helped?
Well, I think that the gap is kind of – there's a lot of different gaps, let me just say right. that. I think there's institutional gaps where, again, historically a lot of programs and services and organizations just never really purposely made a point of making sure that they were programs for fathers or that they geared programs for fathers. I think socially and emotionally that there's, again, a gap just based on some of the things that were happening in our communities and respectively culturally, where fathers just typically that role was just either diminished or just not acknowledged, that it was definitely a needed element in strengthening and maintaining families within the community.
Well, Dion, tell us what made you get involved with the Fatherhood Conference.
Well, I've been working in fatherhood and as an active father in my daughter's life. I saw that, as Derek said, that there was a need for fathers to start becoming more engaged. And, I just wanted to start using my testimony and using my story to influence fathers and kind of give fathers the extra push that they need if they weren't active in their child's life, and just to kind of understand the importance of responsible parenting and fatherhood, and just know the role that we as fathers play in our kids' lives.
Well, tell us that story and what got you involved.
Well, my daughter is 14, and her mother and I haven't always had the best relationship. So, similar to a lot of fathers out there, I was going in and out of court for custody and things of that nature just to fight the battle to see my daughter and to spend time with her. So, I felt like if I was going through it, I knew there were thousands of other men out there who were going through the exact same situation. So just going through court and paying for lawyers and, paying all of these court fees just to basically be able to spend my daughter. I tell people all the time, it's easier to go to the courts and say, hey, I want to relinquish all my fatherhood rights, as opposed to going in and saying, I want to be an active part in my child's life. So for me, I fought that fight for years and years and years. And finally, I just said, I want to help other people and help other people get an understanding of this system is not as easy as it seems for fathers who want to be a part of their children's lives.
Well, and what is it about being a part of your child's life that was so important to you? And how did you reflect on that? Because as you go through this process, it's hard. And so you have to tell yourself, I really mean this, and start even thinking, I would guess, more deeply about why this is important.
Right. Well, I was raised without a father. And I didn't want my daughter to go through the same things that I went through. I wanted to be sure that she knew that I would always be there for her. And I wanted to make sure that she didn't, you know, she never wanted for anything. She never doubted my love. She never doubted. Because a lot of times when kids go through these types of situations where the fathers aren't present, then they start to lack in school. They start to, you know, become less active as far as physical abilities. They start to, you know, start doing drugs and start drinking and, you know, engaging in sexual activities at an earlier age. So I just wanted to be sure that, you know, my daughter just didn't become a statistic. And I did everything that I could do to be sure. I moved from Virginia to North Carolina, 3 hours away, and dropped everything in Virginia to move here and just to be closer to her, because I knew the impact that I was having on her life was going to be greater than anything that I could ever do.
Well, I know that your daughter is happy that you did that, and the radio community here in the Triangle is also happy that you did that. Yeah, yes, indeed. Derek, let me ask you a little bit. You said something earlier about the role of fathers is underappreciated, and I think you made reference to our community. So I'm assuming you're talking about it within African-American communities, that the role might be underappreciated. Are you saying more generally?
Well, generally, but of course it does it manifests itself more so in our African-American and Latino communities. And I think, again, that is not necessarily because that's something that we do internally. That's all of the external factors.
So what is that? What are those factors? What are those pressures that make it even more difficult to...
Well, I think we just, again, just look at the institutional inability to, purposely make sure that there are services and programs tailored to fathers.
And what are those programs? What do they look like? How do you help fathers?
Well, I think, one of the things that we found in our task force is that, there is, a lot of our institutions where there are, particularly in our social service institution, they're very heavily staffed with women. So you have to look at what are those biases that women already have towards men, and how do they transfer their own experiences to that work. So that's one thing. Secondly, again, historically, institutions just always catered to mothers. Mothers were seen as the caretakers, the nurturers, and the ones who basically had the responsibility of really working with and managing the children. Dad was out just, working and financially supporting the family, but never was given that option or allowed to be that nurturer and to be the person who the school called or take the child to the doctor when they were sick and things like that. So everything was always geared towards mom and not dad. So that's one of the challenges and barriers that men in general parenting have had to go through. And then there's a whole host of other things that we look at just historically with African-American Latino families, that, racial equity and access. If men are working and that's their role and responsibility to that degree to assure that financially they're supporting their families, if they are in need of services, well, if everything's closed at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, how are they going to access these services and programs? And then they need to be very specific to, what men and what fathers really need, because you can't provide what you do in a parenting class for moms that's going to transfer and be the same for dads. So you really have to be very intent in making sure that you're doing something specifically geared towards fathers.
So those are suggestions for changing the institutions, the way in the framework, the way in which we deliver services. What do you tell the dads when they come to your conference? What programs do you have for them that can guide them and help them be better fathers?
Well, what the conference does is it allows for us to have a conversation, a celebration, and a reconciliation around strengthening fatherhood. So we have a conversation around why is it important that dads matter? Why is it important that men are fathers are engaged and involved with their children and their families? What are the benefits of that? What are the challenges? What are the barriers? And then the celebration comes, to the fact that we have to be willing to celebrate who we are as fathers, and that we do matter, and that we are acknowledged and recognized, at least within our own community, that we are doing a great job and we're contributing to our families and to our children's well-being and to our community, and that is something that is not often done enough. And then the reconciliation is coming with, okay, so now that we have done all of this, where do we continue to start to do this work, and who can we bring on board as a collective or as a collaborative to help make sure that we are creating a culture and a process that allows for father engagement, father involvement across North Carolina.
Dion, you have blogged about this. You've spoken about this. Things fathers should be doing to be more engaged.
Sure.
Give us some suggestions and some tips and things that you think dads ought to be paying attention to.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, my daughter is 14 and I'm the father of a newborn who's just 4 months old at this point. So I'm starting to do it all over again. But just from this 14-year journey so far, you know, as fathers, one thing that always sticks out to me is how many fathers think that they have to spend a certain amount of money to see their child, or they have to spend money and get their children the best shoes or take them to the biggest amusement park, when at the end of the day, these kids only want time. You know, the time that we spend with our kids is what matters the most. It's what they're going to remember the most. So first and foremost, I think as fathers, we have to realize that time spent is more important than anything else. It's more important than any dollar amount that you could ever spend. But also just find a way to kind of build a bridge with your kids and find, you know, what are they into? You know, a lot of kids these days are into technology. A lot of kids these days are into social media. They're into music. They're into all of these things. That's kind of what I talk about during my workshop at the conference. Like, how can we as fathers meet the kids where they are? How can we find out what they're into, what they're involved in, and just infuse our love for them into that? One of the things that my daughter, just as an example, we started our own YouTube channel. So we have a YouTube channel called The Glad Dad. So on The Glad Dad, I saw that she was interested in doing challenges. And, you know, we were seeing all of these Bean Boozle challenge and all of these crazy challenges. And I said, well, I can do that. And, you know, I decided it was something that we would do together. And, you know, for a lot of people, it's something that, you know, oh, you know, you're on YouTube with your child. But for me, it's just the ability to spend time with her and to be able to go back and kind of document her growth over the last 5-7 years. I'll go back and look at the first video that we recorded, right, and she's a totally different person at this point, you know, 5 years later. So just kind of finding those interests and connecting with the children and, you know, just meeting them where they are.
You talked about the importance of social media. And by the way, I 4-month-old, so congratulations.
Thank you.
And so that's two children. Let me tell you, as an experienced father, everything that you learned in raising your daughter, useless for the second child. Throw it out the window.
It makes no difference. No,
you
does.
Are a
it
rookie does. All over again.
Yes.
So let me just
with
say that.
With no sleep.
That's right, and no sleep. And, by the way, you're older.
Right. Yes, and
all
slower.
That,
yes, and slower. And these kids are faster. So,
but that aside, social media, that's the other thing. And that's particularly as kids move into teenage, that's where they want to be alone.
Yeah.
They want to be separate
right.
from you. So how do we deal with all of that? How deeply engaged do we become in their social media networks?
Yeah, I think it's rough. I think it's really hard. But I think, you know, a lot of times as parents, we can kind of fall to the pressure of saying my child has to have social media at this point. My daughter was 13 before I even let her get her first social media. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I told her she could choose one, and she chose Snapchat. Because these kids are so used to, you know, having technology and being able to do certain things as far as gaming. And, you know, I tell anybody, like, they come out of the womb with a phone in their hand and a tablet in their back pocket. They know how to work these gadgets better than you and I ever could. So we have to find a way to not necessarily let them fall into the pitfalls of social media, you know, because cyberbullying is a real thing. And, you know, the differences between our generations, Frank, is that, you know, if someone was going through something at school, that issue stopped at 3 o'clock when the bell rang or when you got off the school bus. Now those issues continue because the kids are still connected with each other after school. So if there's an issue going on with bullying, if there's an issue going on with someone being teased about their weight or whatever the case may be, there's no disconnect. So in my house, we have a rule, all social media and all electronics go off at 9 o'clock. So at 9 o'clock, we turn the phone off and that's it. And we can't be afraid to take those devices away. And at dinner time, there's no phones at the table during dinner time at my house. So, you know, as parents, we kind of have to realize that we are still the ones who make the rules, and we have to model the same behaviors that we want our kids to display. You know, a lot of times we don't want our kids to pick on people on social media, but at the same time, we go back and talk about, oh, well, this person didn't get enough likes on this picture and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to model the behavior that we want to see, and they can kind of look at that.
Well, the trick to that, particularly when it comes to imposing those rules, because I can see particularly younger parents out there saying, I can't do that now. You know, genie's out of the bottle.
Right.
Can't do. It does seem to me, and I'd love to know your opinion on this, that if you establish that relationship very early on and you have an actual relationship and you don't start becoming the tyrant at the age of 14, that you can manage that. You can navigate that stuff. The trouble is if you haven't had the relationship.
Right. And, you know, as a father, I'm not a friend. You know, it's not my job to be your friend. It's my job to be your dad. So
I don't need your like. I don't need your like.
You don't have to like me. You do not, I'm going to make some decisions that you are not going to like, but I promise you, you will thank me for it 10, 15 years down the line.
Yeah.
And that's something that we have to engage in and we have to do as fathers. Don't worry about being their friends, but just be their parent.
You talked also about engaging in time. Time is what they need. Yeah. Going back to social media and setting the example, I mean, the fact is that we're all on social media too.
Yeah.
And so if your head's in the screen while you're spending time, you're not spending time.
Yeah. Right? You're not spending time, And then again, that goes back to modeling that same behavior. So if we don't want them to be addicted to YouTube or addicted to Facebook, we have to do the same thing and find time to disconnect and put the phone down. If we're sitting at dinner, we got to put our phone on the table. I mean, if it's business, it's going to have to wait.
The only thing I see on YouTube is Glad Dad.
Nothing
else. It's just Glad Dad. Derek, tell me a little bit more about the conference. So what could I expect to see? Who's going to be there?
Okay. So this conference is taking place tomorrow, June 16th, at the Sheraton Imperial Hotel and Convention Center in Durham. We have a great lineup of keynote speakers. Our head keynote speaker is going to be Lavelle Moton, the North Carolina Central University's head basketball coach.
Very inspiring. Yes.
In the morning, we have Dr. Samson Davis, who is an emergency room physician, as author, a speaker. He is one of three who authored the best-selling New York Times book, The Pact. And he has a great story. He and his two friends who grew up in New Jersey without dads and made a pact that they would, you know, come out of that as physicians and very successful. And they did that. So he has a great story to share. And then we're very honored to be able to have Michael Bivins, who is very much a celebrity music mogul and a member of the R&B groups, Belle Biv DeVoe and New Edition.
Yeah.
So he very much wanted to be a part of this conference. He was not able to come. Then he was able to come, and he just kept being very persistent about making a point of clearing his schedule to be a part of this conference. So we're very glad to have him. We have 17 workshops that will also be offered to the conference participants, anywhere from fathers and daughters. Dion, of course, is our master of ceremonies, but also we'll be doing a workshop on the price of pop culture and the impact of social media. We talk about the impact of prejudice on fathers, faith and fatherhood, what the faith communities can be doing to better help to support fathers, suited for success, what does your wardrobe say about you? This year, one of the things that we're adding is we're having a youth component, so we will have a number of youth on-site participating, because we have always had requests from dads to bring their sons. And so because the conference is really geared to fathers, we really didn't have anything in place for youth. So this year we do have two workshops, and we're going to have about 50 to 60 youth on site. And so they are going to be learning about how to prevent school violence and how to remain safe in their own communities. And because we've always had a number of women, due to the keynotes that we always seem to attract, that come, and they also do come as well to support the fathers that they have, either their husbands or who else, because oftentimes they're the ones who get the dads to the conference. So we're having a workshop specifically for them as well. We have a Father of the Year that we always recognize, that a child who has written an essay and submitted essay that talks about what their father figure means to them, and then that is judged by a separate committee. And so we recognize that person. And then we also choose trailblazers, you know, those who really are the models, as Dion mentioned before. And so we lift them up, and so we also celebrate them as well.
Great stuff. Thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Derek Bird is co-chair of the Fatherhood Conference, co-founding member and program director of the Family Resource Center South Atlantic, and that's based in Raleigh. Thank you so much. Dion Showtime Chavis, nighttime radio personality at K97.5, Triangle's hip-hop and R&B station, and he's the founder of Glad Dad. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Frank. It was an honor to be here.
You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Fatherhood Conference tomorrow, Sheraton Imperial Hotel and Convention Center in Durham. And as I said, we've got details at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, he went from jazz bass to the organ, and that was two parts of his trio. No, he actually has three members. Doug Largent Trio is going to be here next on The State of Things. Stay with us.